believe that they need U.S. protection. And you have some of those states, the larger states, those who have military-industrial complexes, as I said, if you look at France and Germany in particular, trying to push forward the idea of an autonomous European defense. But it's not very popular in NATO ranks. Even Britain, as I said, does not follow at all that kind of line. Now, this being said, we are witnessing the recurrence of a pattern that was very familiar during the Cold War, where the Pentagon and the military-industrial complex in the United States would inflate considerably the so-called risk, the threat, the communist threat, or whatever it is, the threat from the Soviet Union,
in order to increase
their military expenditure. Yep.
We're going to go to part two, and we're going to post it online at democracynow.org, so people should check out the website for a web exclusive with Gilbert Achecar, Professor Emeritus of Development Studies and International Relations at SOAS, the University of London. That does it for our show. We're hiring for multiple positions. Go to democracynow.org/jobs. I'm Mimi Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh for another edition of Democracy Now!
Tune to KBOO, Portland.
Join me, Melissa Lesniak, creator and host of That Vegan Show, on Friday, June 27th at 11 a.m. as I interview Kayla and Ashlyn, founders of Little Critter Crew Small Animal Rescue. We are also joined by an active volunteer, Sarah. We will learn all about the mission of the Little Critter Crew and the animals they rescue, which are many. Bunnies, chinchillas, gerbils, guinea pigs, hamsters, hedgehogs, mice, rats, and sugar gliders, and sometimes kittens and geckos. So don't miss That Vegan Show, Friday, June 27th at 11 a.m., only on KBOO.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, an Oregon congressman warns that wildfires are a national emergency, not just a problem for Western states. Portland's fire marshal sounds an alarm about the dangers of fireworks. And the fight over reproductive rights is still on, 3 years after a U.S. Supreme Court decision. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, June 26, 2025. KBOO is currently in our summer membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Annette Newell. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
I rise today to call attention to a crisis in the American West and across the country.
That's Oregon Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici on the floor of the U.S. House, urging her fellow members of Congress to not shortchange funding on the wildfire threat.
Extreme wildfires now ravage my home state of Oregon every summer, and the threat is growing. I'm here today to speak out against cuts to programs that support wildland firefighters and their frontline crews. For years now, American families in the Pacific Northwest have lived on the edge, wondering if this will be the year they're forced to flee their homes at night with only their children, their pets, and whatever few mementos they can frantically grab in the moments after the evacuation alert. I've spoken with Oregonians who lost everything in the blink of an eye, homes, family heirlooms, beloved pets, and tragically family members. I've spoken with people who demonstrate extraordinary bravery and step into the line of duty as wildland firefighters, sacrificing their safety to protect their neighbors and their communities. The 2020 Labor Day fires were the most destructive in our state's history. 1.4 million acres burned, more than 4,000 homes were destroyed, and at least 9 people died. Smoke filled the air for days throughout the region, and last year, Oregon saw 1.9 million acres burn, setting a new record. I urge my colleagues to set aside political differences on this issue because the danger is spreading. Wildfire season now stretches for much of the year. That threat has reached states that never expected to see megafires. From the scorched hills of Hawaii to smoke-filled skies in New York, this is no longer just a Western problem. It's a national emergency. Colleagues, please listen to the American West when we say this is a crisis that will kill thousands more until we act. So let's work together on real solutions, like investing in wildfire preparedness and providing better pay and benefits for wildland firefighters. The administration's current plan of slashing volunteer wildfire crews is a disingenuous attempt to cut costs. It's short-sighted and will cause more loss of property and lives. I stand ready to work with anyone who's willing to take this threat seriously.
And that's Oregon Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici warning about the wildfire threat. In Portland, Fire Marshal Carrie Schimmel has a warning about fireworks during the upcoming first week of July. She points out a fireworks ban is in effect in Portland.
The purpose of the fireworks ban is because of our drought conditions and elevated summer temperatures cause imminent risk of fire starting within the city and throughout the region. Use of fireworks causes an increased demand for emergency services. Fireworks are associated with a heightened risk of death, injury, and property damage, and there is a known negative impact on veterans and pets. We are demonstrating the increase in our call volume. Over the last 6 years, the first 8 days of July, so July 1st through July 8th of the last 6 years, shows the increase of our call volume on the 4th and the 5th. Our call volume increases quite a bit for fireworks-related incidents. On July of 2024, this is the first 8 days of July of last year, and it just shows the fire-related calls compared to all the other calls that Portland Fire and Rescue is responding to on the 4th, 5th, and actually all the way through the 8th, that increase in calls, but especially for fires on the 4th and 5th. And a lot of questions come up about our authority and fireworks accountability. So Title 31 gives us, as Portland Fire and Rescue, the authority to cite per firework for firework possession or use. The City of Portland initially banned the sales and use of fireworks from June 30th to July 14th in 2021. That was under emergency ordinance under Mayor Wheeler at the time. That prepared us to get the work together and do a complete fireworks ban that was adopted by City Council in March of 2022. We upstaff our investigations unit during this time. We also upstaff what we call our brush units that are able to respond to the forested areas. But with our investigators, our Portland Fire Investigations Unit investigates all fires that have a connection to fireworks. So if your firework use is found as a cause, you will be held responsible. Fireworks use that causes injury or extensive damage can result in heavy fines and or jail time. So some of the challenges that come up every year and are questioned, there's definitely a safety concern. We have a hard time getting our inspectors and other employees to step up because of that concern. And so we do partner with PPB in the past. That does become a challenge because of the staffing and the capacity of who we have available on a holiday and work in those, usually from 8 to 2 in the morning. And this is very specific to patrolling the city for fireworks. And also the budget constraints. In the past, it's been overtime. We spend a lot of time on our campaign and outreach. Once the citation is issued, citizens have the option of administrative appeals, and that just also takes quite some time to put together that board to review those citations. And usually that results in a reduction in citation and or a complete waive. Inconsistent regulations with regional partners. We have a complete ban here in Portland. It makes it a little more difficult with our neighboring jurisdictions that have different regulations. So we do try to partner with our surrounding jurisdictions as much as possible to be as consistent as we can. But those are usually the challenges that we face every year.
And that's Portland Fire Marshal Carrie Schimmel mentioning how budget cuts are impacting Portland Fire and Rescue's efforts to stop fires and save lives during that peak fireworks time, the first week of July. Meantime, in Washington state, nonprofits are coping with some large state funding cuts. As Isabel Charlet reports, they're having a big impact on groups that support vulnerable youth. so they're calling out for help to keep the programs running.
Karen Pillar is with Team Child, an organization that supports youth involved with the juvenile justice and mental health systems, which lost half of its state funding. She says education nonprofits lost about $50 million combined in the 2025 budget, impacting programs that support foster youth, unhoused students, and college transition programs. She adds these are services schools can't always provide.
There's been this entire network of nonprofit agencies that have been providing the things that they need, and that's the money that we lost that is, I think, going to be really impactful for how we support students in succeeding in the next couple years.
A number of organizations will likely have to close completely due to the loss of funding, Pillar adds. Governor Bob Ferguson cited a $16 billion revenue shortfall as the reason for the cuts. Pillar says she's frustrated that despite major budget cuts, the state still chose to spend $12 million to build more youth prison space at Stafford Creek Correction Center in Grays Harbor County.
It's hopefully an opportunity to just keep the conversation going that there's a better safety net to build than a criminal safety net.
The state budget cuts are coming at the same time as possible cuts to education on the federal level, Pillar adds. In the face of that uncertainty, she asks for people to consider ways that can help, either with time or money.
Foundations, individuals, local people in the community really need to think about ways they can support the nonprofits that are still existing and the students that do need extra help and extra attention to navigate the public school systems.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
This week marked the third anniversary of the Supreme Court decision in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization, which overturned Roe versus Wade and eliminated the federal constitutional right to abortion. This decision returned the authority to regulate or ban abortion to individual states. As a result, many states have implemented restrictions on or outright bans on abortion, creating a patchwork of access across the country. Several states have banned or severely restricted abortion, and that means women are traveling to other states like Washington and Oregon to access abortion services. Washington U.S. Senator Patty Murray joined in several big events this week on the issue.
3 years in, it's clear that the heartbreak and damage being caused by Republicans' war on abortion is only growing, but so is the public opposition. The outcry is getting louder and louder as more and more people see the full horror of abortion bans in ways they cannot ignore and will never forget. Meanwhile, Republicans aren't just sticking their heads in the sand. They are sticking to the same dangerous agenda that is already denying women health care that they need, pushing maternal and reproductive health care providers out of red states in droves, driving a dangerous spike in pregnancy complications and maternal deaths, and forcing women to stay pregnant regardless of their health or their own wishes. Trump is undermining emergency abortion care and the basic safety protections for abortion clinic staff and patients. Far-right groups are pushing junk science and trying to rip medication abortion off the shelves nationwide, and they are finding support among top health officials in this Trump administration. And Republicans are trying to block marketplace insurance from covering abortion care in their big, ugly bill, not to mention trying to defund Planned Parenthood, one of the biggest health care providers in the entire country. Republicans are sneaking fetal personhood language into everything from state laws to Trump's executive orders. We're talking about an ideology so extreme that it would strip pregnant women of their rights and impose a complete and total ban on abortion, IVF, and even some forms of birth control. And they think they can just slip it onto the books without anyone noticing? Not a chance. We are not going to stop calling out these attacks. We're not going to stop pushing to restore and expand abortion access for patients nationwide. We are not going to stop lifting up the voices of women across the country. And we are going to keep a bright and burning spotlight on the harm Republicans are causing with their anti-abortion extremism. We are in this battle. We are not stopping. Thank you.
And that was Washington U.S. Senator Patty Murray. Also speaking out on abortion and reproductive rights, we have Oregon's 6th Congressional District Representative, Congresswoman Andrea Salinas, who represents Oregon's Willamette Valley.
On June 24th, 2022, the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade under the Dobbs decision, making it essentially illegal for women to decide whether, when, and how to have children. It is no longer our decision across the United States. This has been detrimental. It's been detrimental for people in Oregon and across the nation. We're seeing a shortage of providers, OBGYNs, healthcare professionals, but we're also seeing a surge of women from other states coming into Oregon and using our healthcare services. It's a good thing. They need refuge. They need care. But I will say, we are sacrificing our healthcare system. We are fighting back. The Democratic Women's Caucus and I, we are signing on to bills like the Women's Health Protection Act, which would actually restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land. I'm fighting every day to make sure that my 20-year-old daughter, your daughters, you can get the health care that you need, and that we don't see things like miscarriages, ectopic pregnancies, and abortion made illegal.
Leading up to the president's and Republicans' July 4th deadline, we're going to see a big debate about how the country spends its money. And a Pacific Northwest lawmaker is a key part of this debate. I talked to Oregon senior U.S. Senator Ron Wyden, who is the top Democrat on the U.S. Senate Finance Committee, which is setting the nation's tax policy. They're looking at and making changes to the House spending plan. I had a chance to check in with him about what he said about what the Republicans and the president are calling the big, beautiful bill.
I've been seeing a lot of you, Senator, recently, especially on the Senate Democrats press conferences, including the one where you said what you're seeing right now on Capitol Hill is not really a normal debate with two sides with different approaches. It's more like class warfare. And I wondered if we could start out talking about that.
If you look at the way the Republican package is laid out, all the benefits essentially go to the people at the top. And I feel very strongly that I want an economic system that gives everybody in America the chance to get ahead. And this is basically caviar for the folks at the top, crumbs for the rest of the people. And for example, one out of three in Oregon are on Medicaid. The cut that is being proposed by Senate Republicans is the biggest cut in Medicaid in American history. And the people who are going to get clobbered are kids, the disabled, nursing home patients. More than half of the nursing home bill in our country is paid for by the Medicaid program in most communities. So this is going to cause a tremendous amount of harm. And what I summed up is I can't recall an instance where so much money was spent to drive additional people into poverty.
You're not the only one mentioning this about Medicaid and food stamps being cut and clean energy initiatives are going to be demolished by this.
Your point is so important about the food and health. If the hunger programs are cut, particularly for seniors and the disabled and the like, those folks are sure as the night follows the day going to get sicker. Then there is a need for Medicaid. And so Medicaid is being cut. So you have this real symmetry and misfortune between having the cuts in food programs, having the cuts in Medicaid programs, and having Oregonians being clobbered both ways.
And yet, when you talk to a member of Congress who's a Republican saying that it's not going to hurt people on Medicaid, we're not taking their Medicaid away. There just seems to be a real dissonance between the two parties.
I respect the views of all of my colleagues, but these are the hard facts from the people who keep score for the Democrats and the Republicans. So, the Congressional Budget Office, they are the people who keep track. They found that 11 billion people are going to lose their health insurance, but that doesn't count the people who are going to lose the ACA premium tax credits. So with that, it becomes almost 16 million people. And I think that this is going to work out a real hardship.
In Oregon, I've seen estimates that it's going to be hundreds of thousands of people. In Oregon, it's one of the most Medicaid-dependent states. And so what I've been hearing, not just from the politicians, this is from the doctors, this is from people who are in the hospitals, it's going to hurt our rural hospitals, it's going to affect hundreds of thousands of Oregonians.
The rural hospitals are going to get hit with a wrecking ball. In the Republican caucus, talking about what amounts to a disaster relief fund for rural hospitals, which really makes my point. In other words, the reason that they're talking about possibly having a disaster relief fund is that the problems are so skewed with the tax breaks going to the people at the top and the rural hospitals getting clobbered. Now they're talking about setting up a disaster fund for something that you shouldn't have to set up a disaster fund for. Mal Heuer County, more than half the people are enrolled in the Oregon Health Plan, which is Oregon's version of Medicaid.
Are you going to have a chair set up there for Dr. Oz?
I hope he's coming. I haven't heard one thing or another, but I asked him at his confirmation hearing when he said a number of things that were so damaging to healthcare in Oregon. He said, for example, in nursing homes, that the real answer would be AI, that if we just had good AI policies, that would take care of nursing homes. And then I asked him, so, Dr. Oz, what happens if somebody who's in their 80s has to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night? How is AI going to help them? And he's, well, stammered a little bit and just left it alone. And he really has been very short-sighted. And they're going to clearly, to the extent that they can, around the issues, like there's a lot of fraud and the like. The reality is, that's not what the Congressional Budget Office has found.
There was a clip of him saying that it wasn't going to take Medicaid coverage away from people who deserve to have the coverage. They were targeting the fraud, waste, and abuse.
Most of the people who need Medicaid are already working or are caregivers. So that's over half of the people right there. And then you have the disabled, the folks in nursing home patients is a very large fraction that they basically seem to think are undeserving. But the numbers, I think, are more not just a moral judgment, because I think it is a moral judgment that we do take care of those who are the most frail and vulnerable.
And that was part of my recent talk with Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden. You are listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In Depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, it'll be cloudy down to a low of 57. Tomorrow, the clouds continue. The high will reach 70. Today in history, on this date in 2015, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that same-sex marriage cannot be banned in the United States and that all same-sex marriages must be recognized nationwide. The quote of the day is from Justice Anthony Kennedy. The right to marry is a fundamental right inherent in the liberty of a person. It was a shocking New York City Democratic primary victory. KBOO News reporter Josh Salem tells us more.
The victory of Zohran Mamdani in a primary election race for New York City mayor brings to the forefront the major division in the Democratic Party as leaders still struggle with branding and vision. Mamdani is a self-described Democratic socialist. With his leading opponent, former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, conceding the Democratic primary, Mamdani appears guaranteed to get the nomination. However, analysis of the ranked choice vote counting will still determine the final outcome next week. Many progressives were elated with a young and very charismatic candidate. His campaign videos went viral, and his focus on an affordable cost of living seemed reasonable. But others in the Democratic Party think he might further lessen the Democrats' appeal, with some of the party's policies and stands alienating voters in recent elections. Republicans have already labeled Mamdani's success as a political gift that would help shape elections this fall and into next year's midterms. Donald Trump himself took aim at Mamdani on social media, calling him, quote, a 100% communist lunatic, end quote. Trump added, quote, we've had radical lefties before, but this is getting a little ridiculous. Yes, this is a big moment in the history of our country. Some prominent Democrats might actually agree. Lawrence Summers, the Treasury Secretary under President Barack Obama, aired significant concerns on social media. Summers wrote, quote, I am profoundly alarmed about the future of the Democratic Party and the country, end quote. However, liberal Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who had endorsed him, called for Democrats to take their cue from Mamdani. Sanders said, quote, in many ways, Mamdani's campaign really shows the direction in which the Democratic Party should be moving, and that is not to worry about what billionaires want, but to worry about what working class people want, end quote. He added, people like Mamdani are the Republicans' worst nightmares. In the November election, Mamdani would likely be up against Mayor Eric Adams, who is running as an independent, Republican candidate Curtis Sliwa, and perhaps even Cuomo again, should he also choose to run as an independent. A member of the New York State Legislature since 2021, Mamdani brought forward an optimistic message centered on the cost of living. His grassroots campaign involved thousands of volunteers across the city's five boroughs. Mamdani did well in the city's wealthy enclaves, while Cuomo struggled in all but majority Black and Orthodox Jewish neighborhoods and Staten Island, which is felt to be fairly conservative. Cuomo was trying to recover from a sexual harassment scandal that forced him to resign the governorship in 2021. Mamdani called the New York Police Department, quote, racist, anti-queer, and a major threat to public safety in 2020. He has also used the term genocide to describe Israel's actions in the Gaza conflict. His so-called socialist agenda includes free city bus service, free child care, government-run grocery stores, a rent freeze for people living in rent-regulated apartments, and new affordable housing, all paid for by raising taxes on the rich. Mamdani would be the youngest New York City mayor in more than a century, and its first Muslim and Indian American mayor if elected. But his affiliation with the Democratic Socialist Party will certainly be further weaponized by Republicans. The group, Republicans Against Trumpism, predicted that Republicans would make Mamdani, quote, the face of the Democratic Party, hurting moderates in swing districts and Democrats' chances of taking back the House, end quote. After his potential victory, Mamdani said, quote, it has been tempting, I think, for some to claim as if the party has gone too left, when in fact what has occurred for far too long is the abandonment of the same working class voters who then abandoned this party, end quote. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Trump insists Iran's nuclear program was obliterated, and budget cuts are threatening farm and food programs. For more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2025 Talks.
It was just a tremendous victory for everybody.
President Donald Trump says the U.S. will meet with representatives of Iran next week. In contradiction to a leaked intelligence assessment, Trump insists Iran's nuclear sites and program have been obliterated and there is no need for a new disarmament deal. Intelligence sources say Iran probably succeeded in hiding its enriched uranium, and negotiation is the best way to end the weapons program. Senate Republicans are trying to reach multiple competing ends in crunch mega bill negotiations. The parliamentarian ruled cuts to nutrition assistance are subject to a filibuster, leaving budget writers struggling to make up the difference or find a workaround. And rural communities are defending programs like one that helps small farms supply food pantries. Wisconsin farmer Rufus Hockey says what looks like modest grants have a big local impact.
Even if it's just $20,000 from my farm, I still spend that $20,000 in Lafarge, in Biola, in these small areas. I just can't say how important it is. Every single penny is important out here.
Caitlin Cook with West Virginia's Mountaineer Food Bank says proposed SNAP cuts would just shift costs to states that don't have the money, even when it's vital for small towns.
SNAP benefits are a lifeline in a lot of rural grocery stores. For every SNAP dollar, there's a $1.50 economic impact. So without a doubt, SNAP cuts are going to hit our state very hard.
Senate budget writers have given themselves a little more than a week to negotiate issues including a debt ceiling hike and extending tax cuts, mostly for the wealthy. But at the same time, the bill is taking fire for the economic impacts of rolling back clean energy investments and health impacts of Medicaid cuts on rural hospitals. I'm Farah Siddiqui.
A federal court has stopped the closure of Job Corps locations across the country. Antonia Gonzalez has that and more in National Native News.
In May, the federal government announced it was pausing the Job Corps program, which helps people ages 16 through 24 with career training. The Associated Press reports a lawsuit is challenging the move, and the court ordered the government to keep the program running until the lawsuit is resolved. The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma raised concerns about the program's closure, saying it was the first tribe to operate a Job Corps in 1978, and the program was serving around 150 students. In Texas, the city of Dallas plans to rename three man-made lakes along the Trinity River in honor of tribes. KERA News reports the city council voted to name them Three Sisters Lakes, with each lake named after a tribe that has ties to the state. American Indian and Alaska Native communities in Colorado continue to face gaps in healthcare access, quality, and outcomes. According to a new analysis of the Colorado All-Payer Claims Database, Eric Gladys has more.
While these communities face higher rates of many chronic conditions, they're also not getting important preventative care. David Wright with the Denver Indian Center says fear remains a primary barrier, pointing to decades of mistreatment, including the forced sterilization of women and federal policies that forced medicine men and other spiritual leaders into mental asylums up until 1978.
Native people for a long time have been used to advance medical research without their consent. And so there's a large mistrust biased within the Native communities against the medical profession.
Between 2018 and 2024, American Indian and Alaska Native people were diagnosed with kidney disease, autoimmune, nervous, metabolic, and endocrine disorders such as diabetes at rates far above their white peers. Wright says the analysis, produced in partnership with the Center for Improving Value in Healthcare, will be used to create a culturally tailored education program for health providers. Without additional training, Wright says health professionals are likely to continue to assume that chronic conditions are due to an individual's dietary choices. Many don't understand that for over 100 years, tribes had to rely on government rations, typically high in carbohydrates and salt, to get enough calories. Poverty, lack of affordable housing, and the breakdown of family systems also disproportionately impact health outcomes. Wright says better health will require treating the whole person, not just specific medical conditions. When people are out of balance in any one area, he says there are ripple effects.
If we're not able to provide stable housing, which is not only a mental and emotional and physical importance, but it also will affect the outcomes and the teachings and the role modeling you need for your children and your family structures.
This is Eric Galatis.
For the first time in more than 40 years, India, Poland, and Hungary have sent astronauts into space for a private flight to the International Space Station. The multinational crew successfully lifted off from NASA's Kennedy Space Center, reaching orbit in 9 minutes. The three countries share the tab for the mission, where ticket prices were over $65 million per seat. The mission was delayed several times due to mechanical issues with the ISS, the launch capsule, and the booster itself. This is the second time the booster, named the Falcon 9, has been used and is debuting a new capsule in the Dragon series that includes multiple new design upgrades. The company sponsoring this mission is Axiom Space, a company making plans to create the world's first commercial space station named Axiom Station. Axiom Space will also be attaching several commercial modules to the ISS while it's still operational, then detaching from the station and becoming part of the future planned Axiom Station once decommissioned. The mission will last 14 days, during which the crew will be conducting several scientific studies and experiments for more than 31 countries' collaborative research plan. You're listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Isabel Charlet, and Farah Siddiqui. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineers Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM,